we were getting out athleted at times when we were covering, and we couldn't get off our blocks. And you know, then we went to the rugby after that, and he returned a rugby kick. And you know, a rugby kick's supposed to bounce a few times before it actually gets to the returner, and it didn't. And that's what happens when he can catch that thing on the fly.
Yeah, you want to bring it, you little pussy? I already brought it, bitch. I brought it, set it down on the table, and opened it, bitch.
I don't know why. I just thought of that clip while we were watching. I think it was when it was 38-3. I thought of that clip, but then it just got worse from there.
It felt good, though, didn't it? That stress. When's the last time you can remember a stress-free Iowa game?
I don't know. 2010?
No, Minnesota last year, I think.
We were up 2 scores, but it was never quite that bad.
It was pretty comfortable.
I think it was the Michigan State game with the Micah Hyde pick six.
Mm.
That was probably the last time I felt that good at an Iowa game.
That was good. Even though, obviously, you'd much rather see it against Michigan State than...
I would. Or any Big Ten.
Western Michigan.
Yeah. So welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladel.
Tori Brecht.
And we are basking in the glow of a resounding 59-3 thrashing of Western Michigan. And so my question for you, Tori, is... How much of that was Iowa, and how much of it was Western Michigan?
Well, Iowa is undefeated against winless teams this season, so if you can't get excited about that, I don't know what you could say. Hey. No, but seriously, though, you know, for a team that we've complained plays down to the level of its competition too often, that lets teams hang around, that, you know, finds unique ways to make games closer than they should be, to go out and do exactly what you should do, convincingly just curb stomp a team, you know, I think it's a sign of progress, no matter how bad that team is. And if you remember, leading up to it, everybody kept saying, oh, look out, they played Northwestern pretty tough. They gave Michigan State a pretty good game. And, okay, maybe they were beat down a little bit from those two games. That could have been part of a factor. But, you know, Iowa left no doubt in that game at all. Offense, defense, special teams, all three phases just humming.
Everything was clicking. Everything was cooking with gas. And it was really nice to see. It was really nice to see a lot of players play up to the level that they could, you know, where you see flashes of potential. It was great to see that potential actually realized. I thought what was interesting was the script of what we thought we were going to see versus what we saw was completely different. And we thought we were going to see Iowa pounded out with Mark Weissman in the running game, struggle in the passing game. You know, wasn't even a week ago that you and I were sitting here nodding our heads, talking about the liability. It was our special teams, our kick coverage, you know, and then our secondary was the weak spot of the defense. Well, special teams and secondary combined for 28 points.
And the defensive line knocked down their quarterback, I think, something like 9 times. They didn't register a sack, but they made him uncomfortable all day. I mean, he looked terrible.
And Mark Weissman was sitting on the bench with, you know, a nice chilled Gatorade, having someone rub his shoulders.
Exactly.
And watching the whole thing, you know, unfold, and probably happy to be there and getting the rest.
I would think so. It was good.
Yeah. So what was your, I mean, at what point did you, it wasn't in doubt for long. I think once we were up 17-0, I think was the first punt return, made it 17-0.
I can't even remember that the scores were coming so fast and furious there.
And then it was 24-0, and I thought, okay, this one's in the bag.
Yeah.
And then it was, let's play for halftime so we can get the ball first. But then there was that pick six right before halftime.
Right.
And it's like, this thing's turning into PlayStation.
Yeah, it was something else. And, you know, as I wrote in my column this week, my son wanted to go get ice cream because he was so bored. And I don't know if you know this, but you could only buy ice cream at like 2 spots in the entire stadium.
Yeah.
So it was actually quite a heck of a walk. And I was thinking to myself as I'm walking through there looking for where the ice cream spot was, you know, I'm really not concerned at all with what's going on in the field right now. And I kind of like it.
Well, it was a good game. It was a great day to be out. A perfect fall day.
How beautiful. So good the students mostly stayed at their tailgates.
Yes, they did. Yeah, it was kind of like things kind of cleared out fairly quickly too.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of had the stadium, things were loosened up. I don't know. What did you see? Let's turn around. What did you see that concerned you? Anything?
I would just say, you know, I guess the only thing, but you know, the offensive line, I guess, didn't really seem to be blowing off the ball as much as one would have thought. For, I mean, they ended up with over 200 yards rushing, but as I've kind of been mentioning all year, mm-hmm. not a lot of those kind of long runs, you know, a lot of grindy 3-4 yards,
yeah.
Too many times where you're getting no yards or 1 yard. So I'd like to see that continue to improve, to see them kind of blow off the ball a little bit better and get some, you know, push so that we can open up maybe some more of those 10 to 15, the big chunk plays on the ground.
It seems like we need two and a half quarters to really get that ground game established and really start wearing down the defenses. And it seemed like maybe in this game we didn't need to.
Sure, and it makes you wonder if they'd have just kept pounding Weisman at them like they did against Iowa State, would things have opened up a little bit more. But we were mixing, matching, running styles, running backs, the two fumbles, you know.
Yeah, that was concerning a little bit.
You know, I did agree. I was very happy to see in Coach Ferentz's press conference transcript this time that he said that LaShawn Daniels' fumble, anybody would have fumbled because the way the guy's head hit right on the ball.
It did.
You know, I was concerned that we've seen this from Coach Ferentz before. If you have ball security issues, sometimes it's a ticket to long stretches on the bench.
If it's a freshman.
Especially if it's a freshman. So I was pleased to see that he was not, you know, thinking, oh, can't trust him. Yeah. I don't think that's the case. So I think we're going to continue to get to see that exciting freshman a little bit.
I don't know that we'll see that kind of success in the punt return game.
Well, that was some unique circumstances. I mean, that punter just kept knocking line drive punts. Yeah. I mean,
the coverage was not good. The ball had zero hang time.
Right.
But, you know, it was fun to watch.
It sure was, yeah. And more rugby punts, please. We'll take that.
Yeah. And then the second interception from Lowry was right in front of our seats.
Yep.
In fact, it was so close to the
seats. Tanner Miller one was in front of our seats, too.
It was. But that one, the second one, from Lowry, I was actually looking down at my phone to tweet something complaining about, I think, because somebody had fumbled right prior to that, and I was getting ready to tweet something, you know, sarcastic or something like that, and then the crowd erupted, and I almost dropped my phone, and I look up and I see, you know, Lowry running for the end zone, so that was kind of a fun thing. But, I mean, we really couldn't have drawn up a better day, and my concern is, and I think Ferentz alluded to this, maybe he's superstitious as well, but, you know, for a team that just could not seem to buy a break for the last year, you know, to have everything line up, all the stars, you know, align and all the breaks and all the bounces go their way for one day. Did they use up all their luck in one game?
Did they use up all their bad luck last year?
Well,
so maybe it's time for a general realignment, you know, or as Jen Bielema would say, karma is finally coming our way. I don't know.
So somebody on one of the message boards was talking about, how every successful Ferentz team had a game where it clicked. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look back at like 02 or 04 or 09, you know, though there were a number, well, 09 was kind of the heart attack kids for a while there, but, you know, it seemed like, you know, the team was struggling to find its identity in 02. Mm-hmm. You know, they kept letting folks back. Remember, they let Penn State back into it. They let Purdue back into it, you know, and everything. But then once they found their rhythm or their, you know, they started to trust, not only trusting and having confidence in each other, but also the other units, then suddenly, you know, the floodgates were open on offense and defense. Do you think that we've had something like that, or is this just...
You know, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm not going to see a repeat of 2002 with this team. I don't know that they have enough of those super stellar playmakers. I think that they still have a few more weaknesses. My concern is that, you know, I think a lot of us were sort of feeling that way after the Minnesota game last year when everything kind of clicked and it was a comfortable win. And I believe it was the next week they went on the road and beat Michigan State.
Yep.
So you're sitting, what, 4-1, 2-0 in the Big Ten?
Right.
Penn State coming into Kinnick for a night game, which you thought...
You were 4-2. Because of Central Michigan.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But things are kind of...
State.
The ship was righted. Things were heading in the right direction. You're undefeated in conference. the team that you've been able to handle really easily, not really easily, but the team that even when they're good, you give great games and beat them a lot. And you got them coming in prime time at night and you just completely got annihilated. Yeah. You had a bunch of injuries and that started the whole tailspin.
That's when, that's when the wheels came off.
Right. So am I predicting the wheels are going to come off this season again? No, but I'm also not thinking that it's probably going to be smooth sailing from here on.
No,
either.
No.
I mean, they're 0-9 combined, the three teams we've beaten. So it's tough sledding. But I do like the way the schedule's laying out. I think it gradually gets harder.
It is. It's kind of like, you know, if you're into a workout or if you're into running, it's getting harder as we're getting better.
Right.
And so it's stretching it. Now, my question for you, and I think one of the questions that was posted on the on one of the message boards is Minnesota better than Northern Illinois?
You know, I've watched quite a bit of the Minnesota games and I don't think they look that much better than last year. I mean, they've played poor opponents as well and they're very one dimensional. You know, they can run okay with their quarterbacks primarily and some running backs. And they have a nice offensive line, but they can't throw. I mean, they really can't throw. And our weakness is our secondary. The, you know, what I think will be so fascinating is Iowa's run defense really for real, or have they just played against a bunch of bad teams?
Or is the secondary really coming into its own with, you know, with the three picks in the last, or four picks in the last two games? Or is it just because they, you know, the quarterbacks they face.
But, I mean, this will be the stiffest test the run defense has faced probably this year, I would guess. But, again, the quarterbacks from Minnesota aren't exactly like the Kane, Coulter, you know, the real quick twitch Martin Taylor Martinez type. They're more of the, like that Jordan Lynch from Northern Illinois.
Before,
and Iowa actually bottled him up on the ground very well. And he beat Iowa with his arm. I don't think Minnesota's quarterbacks
are. All right, so let's, before we dive too deeply into Minnesota, let's toast the Western Michigan victory, because, you know, either one of two things. Either the Western Michigan game that we just saw was either a turning point in this team's growth and progression, or it's the last time we will feel this good for the year.
Well, before we toast, you know, you and I have been getting along so well this year, mostly agreeing with everything. My understanding is you had some points in my column that you disagreed with this week. So
it's not so much I disagreed with it. I felt, while I was reading it, I felt like, wow, you know, you need to put the brakes on the optimism just a little bit.
I think I predicted 6-6.
Yeah, I thought that even that was a little, you know, I mean, there were some things that were kind of like, you know, and I don't have it handy.
No, I think there was some wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And here's where.
I think it was, you were taking the growth between the last, let's say, three games and projecting that forward another two or three games. And I think as we've seen, you know, one of the fallacies that I always get into is when we talk about somebody has a great junior year.
Right.
Like, you know, that 09 team and Stanzi and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's just like human nature. You think, well, when do these guys come back as seniors?
That's how it works on my PlayStation.
Exactly.
He gets like 7 extra points
from
the training.
They go from an 83 to a 91.
Duh.
Yeah. But I think what we've seen is that it's not a linear growth.
Right.
Sometimes you have setbacks. Sometimes you go forward and take, you know, you take two steps forward, one step back. I mean, maybe the trend is upwards, and I think that there's something to be said for that. But I'm not ready to say that this team is still not the team that let NIU slip by them,
mm-hmm.
that let Iowa State almost climb back into it, you know, and that let Missouri State hang around way too long.
Right. Here's where I was going with that, though. And I've seen this also with my pro team that I really like, which is the Chicago Bears. What really felt good to me is, and you actually alluded to it earlier, that the things that were identified and shown to be weaknesses earlier were the things that obviously got focused on, corrected, and improved.
Yep.
And that, to me, is a huge sign, because you didn't see that last year.
No.
Last year, a problem in game one was a problem in game two was a problem in game 12. And it was the same crap.
Plus they were adding problems.
And they were adding new problems. So I'm saying what I like is that I think you can extrapolate that this team and the coaching right now
right.
is at least addressing things that they've identified as weaknesses and working very hard to correct them, and they seem to be responding to it, although against lesser opponents at this time. So we'll see if it carries over. But you got to like the feeling that in the past, Ference really has had these teams that have progressed and gotten better within one single season. And yes, it's a little bit of wishful thinking, but I think there's some evidence that could be the case with this team this year.
Right, so my biggest beef with 2010, especially, 2010 to me is, I still get angry thinking about the talent that was squandered on that in that year and just, what we should have had out of 2010. But I mean, my issue with 2010, 2011, and especially last year is a team that just doesn't seem teachable.
Mm-hmm.
A team that is not only not making progress, but is regressing as the year goes along. And I think that's frustrating because, as we have often said, is that regardless of what you think of Ference as a coach, he sees himself probably as a professor of football.
Sure.
At the collegiate level. And so it's really about how well the team is responding to his tutelage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we're saying is, this team seems to be responding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's encouraging. Now, I think Western Michigan was, on paper, on par with Iowa State. I think that NIU is so far the toughest team that we played, and we lost to them.
Mm-hmm.
Barely, but we did.
Right.
But can we then, turn this thing around and continue to grow against... Can we continue to grow faster than the competition improves?
True. Well, and I think one thing that has made me feel a little bit better about the possibility of Iowa, having a winning record and potentially going to a decent bowl this year, is watching the other Big Ten teams because...
In
our division, I have not been impressed at all. I mean, nobody has wowed me. I mean, none of them have wowed me. So, I think that...
Well, Northwestern and Michigan keep winning.
Right.
But it's the style. That,
right. And, I don't understand why people get on Iowa for lacking the style points. Michigan, arguably... has played worse than Iowa this year. I mean, I watched that Connecticut game. That's not a good team. And Akron is probably on par with Western Michigan. And Michigan, by all rights, should have lost that game. I mean, the fingertip catch in the end zone would have beat them at home by Akron. So, I'm not willing to concede any game against a division opponent at this point. I don't think they're going to win them all. But I certainly think they're going to be competitive and in every game. And I like the fact that this team seems to be learning to finish a little bit better. There's no guarantee that's going to continue, but I don't have that same sense of doom and dread that I did pretty much every game last year.
Well, they're young and they're still upside and they're realizing it. So
they're learning how to win.
Exactly. All right, well, let's toast this one. Mm-hmm. We can pivot to Minnesota and conference play. So Minnesota, we touched on it a little bit, but do you think Minnesota is the best team that we would have played thus far?
I'd say probably a toss-up between them and Northern Illinois. I think Northern Illinois probably actually has a more complete offense.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota might be a little tougher on defense just because they're a Big Ten team and recruited a Big Ten level.
See, my issue is that it's in that freaky little stadium they have up there. That if this were in Kinnick, I would be... completely comfortable with this game. I would have very little anxiety about it.
Those last two losses up there were both kind of freaky deals. I mean, the one was the DJK was the only guy that came to play,
showed
and the rest
up.
Of the team quit.
It's like, hey, whatever drugs he's on, can you pass those around to everybody else, please?
And, and then the other game, I can't even remember details of it because I get post-traumatic stress and blackout bad losses. But if I recall, was it an onside kick game again?
Yeah, it was overtime.
Yeah, it was another one of those crap the bed games. So, one would think that... much like the Iowa State game. Now, I'm not saying Minnesota's as bad as Iowa State. That's not true. But I think arguably the Iowa State environment is even more hostile than up there in Minnesota.
Well, that's true. But we were commenting that just strange things happen when you go on the road to Iowa State. And I think you can say the same thing about Minnesota.
Right.
It is a tough place to play on the road.
I like the fact that we're playing up there earlier this year, though. Yeah. Because you know, last year, if you remember, because I think what kind of happens with Minnesota.
Well, last year was in Kinnick.
It was in Kinnick, but it was also the first game, wasn't it?
Yes.
And what I like about how that sets up is that Minnesota really, much like Iowa, but Minnesota kind of, you know, feasts on their cupcake schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gets all fat and happy and thinks they're going to be good. And then they tend to get punched in the mouth when they play a Big Ten team.
Yeah.
And I think Iowa, having already suffered a loss to probably a better team than anybody on Minnesota's schedule, has already kind of been through that. And Iowa's already had the tough, you know, bitter rival on the road game. They got through that with a victory. So I like the way they're setting up to do this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think, like I said, if it were in Kinnick, I would feel a lot better.
Well, for certain.
Yeah, but, you know, and we hear again. This game is circled. But really, this is, I think it is really, if you're reading like the, and that's the one thing about Iowa being on the upswing a little bit, is you find yourself consuming more football news.
Absolutely.
You know, you're reading more, you're following the Big Ten blog, mm-hmm. you know, on ESPN, you're following Off-Tackle Empire and Blackheart Gold Pants, and you're reading up on the Big Ten Network, and you're watching all the clips and the analysis, and you're DVRing all those shows.
Well, they're even starting to talk about Iowa yeah. on the Big Ten Network.
But here's how they're setting it up, is that the two teams that have turned it around from last
which
year
one's for
are
real?
Iowa
which
and one's Minnesota.
A
one of them is for real.
Right.
And we're going to find out Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where, you know, that's where I'm looking for is that, you know, you want that to be, you want us to come out on top.
Well, it makes it kind of exciting too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at least, you know, well, of course, you know, you have to remember at this point, at this week last year, well, not this week, I guess the Central Michigan debacle.
The Central Michigan thing was just, you can't get past that.
How did that happen? I mean, seriously. I still don't
understand.
We're
going to be 80 years old talking to this whatever podcast technology they have that we're still going to be bitching and baffled about
that. Because I'm thinking about how, well, you know, I remember we beat Minnesota pretty convincingly. Then we had that great, you know, it was an ugly game, but, you know, a tough road win at Michigan State. And man, things were really looking pretty good. And then.
But I remember just, I still think about how I think we were up 9 points with like a couple minutes left to play. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I can't believe we gave up a touchdown. That sucks. The Gamblers are going to be pissed.
Yeah, I know. Since that game is when you started doing your head math all the time, right? Where I get more comfortable because I'm not as good at math as you.
Well, you know, I mean, I think they really shocked me because Central Michigan is, you know, demonstrated that there are such things as 8 and 9 point plays.
Well, that's when you were telling me about the Iowa State game. Oh, I'm not comfortable. You know, I'm like, dude, you're crazy. I'm not comfortable. And then next thing you know, I'm like, I'm not comfortable.
You can never be comfortable if your team only recovers 50% of onside kicks.
50%? So, I think it's more like 25, yeah, isn't it?
But
out of the last four.
So I'm just looking at the schedule here. I mean, Minnesota's played UNLV, New Mexico State, Western Illinois, and San Jose State. And they beat all of them fairly convincingly. Western Illinois giving them the toughest game. I watched like maybe the
Illinois
first half of that game. Western Illinois
would
get spanked by Western Michigan.
Yes, they would.
And Iowa. Well,
and
Iowa
Northern
State
Illinois.
And Northern Illinois. Yeah. So, and, you know, it really kind of doesn't matter on which Minnesota team shows up.
Yeah, you know, they're not an offensive juggernaut because
no.
They're not going to throw the ball. And obviously they give up points. I mean, they're averaging giving up around 20 points. You know, you got to figure Iowa's probably going to be up in the 20s, if not higher.
Yeah.
And I think the Iowa defense is really a quiet strength of this team.
I think if they had a solid quarterback like we saw in Northern Illinois and, you know, a receiving core that really made us nervous, like – supposedly, like Western Michigan had some, you know, solid receivers. Then I would be more nervous about this. But we'll hold off on our predictions, I guess. But
sure.
I think hopefully we're going to get not the same margin of victory, but more the same sort of focus and improvement and energy and clicking on all cylinders that we saw in last
Saturday.
You know, I
think the thing that you have to be concerned about always with this game is the intangibles. You know, the level of hate and or desire to be like Iowa, which
yeah.
I think Minnesota's football program has. You know, I think if you recall, last year I was very confident about this game because I felt that Iowa was really taking the lack of having any rivalry trophies.
Yes.
Big time, personally. I mean, they had the empty trophy case down in their locker room. So, you know, they had that. That was a huge goal for them. You know, now we're sitting there. We got the Cy-Hawk trophy. We do still have Floyd. You know, is it going to have the same intensity to keep Floyd as it was to get it back?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Defend Floyd. So, looking ahead, though, which we can do as fans, which the teams can't, but we can look ahead. Looking to the just the conference in general, and we were talking last week, and I noticed there was a thread that you were in on Hawkeye Report about where's the 6 wins coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're sitting at 3-1, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to have this win.
For sure. Yeah,
right?
This is, I think so.
This is a bowl eligibility on the line.
You know, I always put... I never predict specific wins, usually against specific teams. That's too hard. But I like to put, like, little pools.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get X amount of wins out of this group.
Yeah.
So the 3 wins I see coming are out of the group of Minnesota, Purdue, Michigan State, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. Probably in that order of
wins.
Likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think 3-2 against that group.
And you're putting Michigan, Ohio State, and Nebraska. You're saying maybe one win?
Then I would
win.
Say Michigan, Nebraska, possibly one win. If you're going to get to 7 wins.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to beat Ohio State.
No.
So I see, to me, ceiling is 7-5.
Okay.
Floor is 5-7.
Yeah.
My preseason prediction was 6-6. I'm still thinking that's where I feel like Iowa's probably going to come. Because that's a pretty tough schedule.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, obviously, Purdue and Minnesota are the 2 games that Iowa probably, if they were honest, the players would probably say, you know, we really should win those games, I think. I think we're a better squad than those. And then I think, you know, they'll go toe-to-toe with Wisconsin, because they always do. You know,
I'm
more afraid of Northwestern than Wisconsin.
I think both of them. I don't feel so good about Wisconsin. And I think Northwestern, that's here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So is Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's a
plus. So is Michigan State.
You know, I think that the key thing is, what I was driving at is, that all of our scenarios where we become bowl eligible, either 6-6 or 7-5, are predicated on winning this week in Minnesota.
Most likely.
You
I mean,
lose
I don't
this
think
week,
it's for sure. But
okay, but you lose this
you've
week.
You've made it
it's
a
very hard,
tough climb and unlikely.
So really, in many respects, like you were saying, we were talking 2 weeks ago about the Iowa State game taking on a lot of meaning for Ferentz and his legacy.
Sure.
The Minnesota game kind of does as well, because it's going to determine whether all the good things we saw last 2 weeks are really part of a turnaround or just fluky.
They're fool's gold from panning bad opponents.
Exactly.
You know, maybe that's an intangible positive for Iowa, is that Ferentz has not won at TCF Bank Stadium yet.
Ugh.
And, you know, that hopefully is a motivator to a certain extent.
But I think there's a lot on the line, and we'll have to get to our predictions.
What I like about this team this year, though, is they really do seem to have much more focus to me. Than last year's team.
I'm not going to say focus. You know what I like about this team is they ran out of the tunnel. We saw at Western Michigan. They ran all the way to the opposite end zone. And they were bouncing around, high-fiving each other, jumping up and
looks
down.
Looks like they're having fun
again. They're enjoying playing football.
Yeah.
Did you see that last year?
I did. No, not last year. Last year, and I wrote a column about that last year. That
they did not look like
they were
like
a chore.
Fun.
It looked like their job.
Yeah.
You know,
so. This team is jacked up, which means they're young, too, so they're going to make some mistakes, but they are jacked up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's why I think even if they lose this game, I predicted at the beginning of the year, I'll recall, to everybody, that this was going to be a big roller coaster this year.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be highs and lows.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, I think they're going to be the kind of team that surprises you. I could see, like, losing to Minnesota and beating Wisconsin. I mean, I could honestly see that.
Sure, why
we've
not?
Seen that before
with
this team. You know, we've seen that many times. Lose to Northwestern, beat Penn State when they're ranked, you know, in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, that this has the feel of that kind of team, I think.
Yeah. Well, with that, then let's move on to our expert.
Yes.
And we'll circle back for some predictions.
Our expert this week is actually fairly well known on the
Hockey
Report.
He is a big man on the message boards.
There you go.
He is a known commodity.
Is that that's like being the fastest Special Olympics hurdler? Right?
It's like something. It's like being the the
world's
smart,
tallest midget.
Exactly. It's like, what are you going to do with that? But we'll talk with our guest from South Florida.
So our special guest this week in
Ich bin Expert.
Is it Ich bin Expert or Ich bin ein Expert?
Ich bin Expert.
Ich bin ein Berliner. I'm the jelly donut. Anyway, our guest this week is Hawken SEC on the Hawk Airport Board, our friend Anthony, who lives in SEC country, or did. Do you still? I guess you're kind of in...
Well, I guess I'm more in ACC country now, but it's just too much of an effort to change the screen name. I didn't want to confuse anybody, thinking that there was another jackleg out there who posted just like...
South Florida.
That's ACC?
Yeah, I'm in Hollywood, just west of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, Miami, the Hurricanes.
Okay.
The
U. The U.
Right. So Anthony is a photographer. He's done a lot of really cool work, both rock and roll bands, sporting events, attractive modeling.
The raves.
I do Ultra Music Festival, yeah.
Which is, those are some of my favorite pictures.
Oh, thank you.
So how did you get started in photography?
Yeah, because that wasn't your first calling, right?
No, my first calling is actually music. Yeah, I spent 4 years as a touring musician in the UK, and then... when I moved back from England, I moved to Spokane, Washington, and on the tail end of the whole grunge scene, had another band that I was involved with there that really didn't go anywhere, but we tried like hell.
Wait a minute. You were in a grunge band in Washington in the 90s and you couldn't make it?
You're doing it wrong.
No, we weren't. I said it was at the tail end of the whole grunge thing. I think if I would have compared us to any band that was kind of going at that time, I would have said that we were comparable to like the Posies, but you know,
the band from there that I always liked that I thought was underrated was Screaming Trees.
You know, I saw Screaming Trees live when I was in England at the Reading Festival in 1992. Nirvana headlined the whole festival. And on the last day they got to name every band that was going to be on the main stage. And Screaming Trees was one of them. And no one had really heard of them in the UK. And the biggest thing that I remember about the Screaming Trees is they had these two brothers that played guitar and bass. And these guys were probably 5'6", 5'7" each. And they were just as wide as they were tall. They were these fat little dudes with big goatees and long hair. And the bass player insisted while they were playing on doing like these combat rolls across the stage while he was playing. Dude never missed a note, but it was freaking hilarious to watch. That's the only time I ever saw Screaming Trees.
I never did see him live.
So the music thing kind of ran its course.
Well, it didn't really run its course. I mean, cause I DJed for 9 years, I've always been in touch with music. Now I get my musical kind of fix, I guess, through doing concert photography and working like the huge festivals like Ultra. And I've done some private work for some pretty big name DJs. But I got into photography when I was about 13 or 14. My grandfather was an enthusiast. He had his own little black and white dark room down in the basement of his house. And, hanging right in front of me on my desk here is, the first camera that he ever gave me, which was one of his old 35 millimeter SLRs. And, I just kind of got into it that way and I shelved it for a long time. I had cameras here and there. But when I decided to get away from the corporate world, outside of teaching scuba diving, which was kind of what put my feet back on the ground and kind of gave me, I guess, a sense of purpose again. But I found myself picking up my camera and going out and taking pictures of things and doing a lot of street photography at that time.
But no, you know, no offense. There's a lot of folks out there with a camera and a business card, right, calling themselves photographers. But you are running
GWCs. That stands for guy with a camera.
Yeah. But you're running in some really rarefied circles here as far as the crowds, the subjects. You know, you've kind of carved yourself a niche in both music and sports. How did you – I mean, was that just a stroke of luck or did you seek that out?
It really was a stroke of luck. I kind of – I didn't want to say that I tripped into it, but I have a friend from England named Andy Moore. And if you look him up on the internet, he goes by the name of Cryo Man. He's a performance artist. And I was – when I first moved to Miami, I was teaching scuba diving down in South Beach. And I was in the shop, and Andy walked into the shop. And he didn't know why I was there. I didn't know why he was there. So we started talking, and he told me he was doing this new thing called Cryo Man. And he was a professional stilt walker. He does flame, you know, fire eating, all kinds of stuff like that.
Which is just you see that in the street corners in Miami, apparently. I mean, yeah, you would attract a crowd, I think.
We have a lot of flaming individuals in Miami.
But yeah, I mean, in Miami, you go to the mailbox to get the mail, and you got to walk past the guy on still spitting flames.
Exactly. But he was putting together this new creation, and long story short, he was looking for something to put a tank of liquid nitrogen that he could strap it to himself so he could use these guns that shot liquid nitrogen. And so we started talking, and I asked him what he was doing it for, and he said he was working with something called the Ultra Music Festival.
Wait a minute. Don't you have to call Homeland Security first before you give someone liquid nitrogen for that purpose?
I think he's got all the licenses he needs. The guy is amazing. He travels around the world doing what he does. And but anyway, he hooked me up with the owners of Ultra. I did some promotional work for him. And then they asked me to come shoot the festival for them. And I am now in my eighth year with Ultra. And because of Ultra, my contact list with artists that I work with, I'm not going to sit here and brag and say, yeah, it's really impressive and I'm friends with all these guys. But yeah, it's really impressive that I'm friends with all these guys.
So would you describe yourself as self-taught primarily then? I mean, did you do any coursework in it or...
You know, when it comes to just the mechanics of the camera and developing my eye, that's all pretty much self-taught. I've taken a couple of dynamic lighting courses to learn how to light subjects in a studio. Other than that, everything has been pretty much self-taught.
And there's everything now is digital, and that doesn't that kind of afford you the ability to capture lots and lots of photos and,
Yeah, it's, you know, there's no development anymore. Everything's, you know, on a CF card, and you just load it into your laptop or your computer and put it in a developing software. And I mean, like Photoshop or Lightroom, and you can do whatever you want with the image. It makes it a lot easier, but where it's really hurt the industry is that by making it easier, of course, now everyone thinks they can do it. And that's one of the big things. In fact, I'm a member of an electronic dance music photographers group. And that's one of the big things that we're working on right now is getting these guys who are kind of cutting our feet out from underneath this. Because I'm used to getting paid decent sums of money to go shoot events and work with DJs. And these guys are coming in just because they want the access. They're like, oh, we'll do it for free. And we're trying to bring these guys along with us saying, you know, stop working for free because you're really killing the industry.
As a former newspaper reporter, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not fun. And it has hurt my bottom line a little bit. Luckily for myself that I'm diversified enough in my work between the sports, modeling, product work and music work that, I mean, it's cut down a little bit on my access, but not for the things that I truly want.
So you know, pivoting to sports here for a second. I mean, this is an Iowa football podcast, and you have been on the field for Iowa bowl games, right?
Yeah, I've shot the Outback Bowl. I did the Orange Bowl, two Outback Bowls, Orange Bowl, and I did the first Insight.com Bowl. I didn't go to the one against Oklahoma. But yeah, it's,
you didn't miss much. Yeah, Jim and I were there.
I watched it on TV, so I didn't really miss anything at all.
I can't bring Jim to bowls because they lose. Yeah. We went to the first Orange Bowl together. They lost. I went to the next Orange Bowl with just my wife. They won. Then yeah. We went to the Outback Bowl against Florida with Jim, and they lost. Then I went to the Outback Bowl with my friend Todd, and they won. Right. And so, yeah, Jim's like the bowl kiss of death.
I have to – someday I will go. If it's BCS or Rose, I will go.
You've never seen Iowa win on the road.
No, I've never seen Iowa win on the road. That's my curse. But Arizona doesn't really count as a trip anymore, so I'll do that one if they go back to – Inside.
Well, yeah, they do so great down there.
Well, it's not Insight.com Bowl. What is it? They changed the name, but
some stupid internet company.
But
like
how did you the GoDaddy Bowl is in Alabama? It's the Mac, I think, that plays the bowl. GoDaddy. Anyway, so
how'd you become an Iowa fan then, Anthony? Just from growing up here?
Yeah, you know, I grew up there. My dad went to Iowa. My dad was in the Iowa marching band from '66 to '68. He was in the tuba line there.
So he saw some bad football.
Yes, he did.
Oh, those were the Gary Snook days, man. So yeah, he saw some real bad football. You know, my folks had season tickets from the 70s, by the mid 70s all the way up to just recently. They just gave up their tickets because they just couldn't make it to games.
Well, in the 70s, they were giving away season tickets if you shopped at the same grocery store 3 weekends in a row.
That was about right.
It was the green stamps and Iowa season tickets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up going to Iowa games. You know, I've had a lot of family members that are graduates of the law school there, medical school. And, of course, my dad, you know, the fine arts, and because he got his music degree there. So it just grew up, you know, bleeding black and gold. And, you know, even though I didn't go there, I have my degree through the University of Maryland. And I did that while I was in the Air Force. But other than that, it's just.
Oh, so your loyalties are going to be tested here in a couple of years.
Yeah, I have. You know what? I never stepped foot on the campus in Maryland. It was all through satellite courses on military bases. So.
You see, that's like my brother. He's, you know, he's, I think he goes there for testing, but he's taking his master's through Michigan State. Yeah. He's really looking forward to coming to the game. I'm like, that's fine, but if you wear 1 ounce of green.
No doubt.
Yeah, Iowa State's just out of the question. You just can't, no, there's just no way in hell. I have, my two youngest cousins just graduated from Iowa State, and for 4 years I didn't talk to them. I told them I wouldn't talk to them until they graduated.
Yeah, I don't talk to Iowa State grads that much either.
except
for this one.
Yeah, that one lives in your house.
That's on the adjacent pillow. So, okay, so it's music and sports. I mean, that's a pretty good portfolio. But I've also, I mean, anybody who's been on the Hawkeye Report has seen your signature file. And usually I think the first word out of their mouth is more.
Yeah.
So you also do glamour photos?
You know, I haven't changed it out in a long time. That girl that's on my signature photo, and it's not even like that great of a picture, but she's actually a dancer for Ultra. She's Russian and a former gymnast. And her name's Olesya, and she's just a real sweetheart. And I've worked with her on some other projects. But she does like fitness and some bikini modeling. So that was just a test shoot that we were doing, actually. It was a good time.
So one thing that's funny, Anthony, is, you know, when I was still in the newspaper business, I was on the news side, and people would constantly ask me, you know, you love sports, you love talking about sports, so why aren't you a sports reporter? And my answer is always, because I love sports, and I don't want it to be my job. I don't want to be jaded by it. So tell me about sort of that professional barrier with, you know, taking pictures of very attractive young ladies in very few clothes.
Well,
do you get bored of it?
It's a fine line. I've never crossed that line professionally, and I never will. And it's a personal thing for me.
No, but does it skew your perception? Like you go and you're at the grocery store and you run around the corner and you strike up a conversation with like a, you know, attractive blonde, and you're like, well, you're not really a bikini model that I've been working with all day. So,
well, you know, here's where it gets weird, is that because you work around these women, you find yourself being very visual with other women. So I can go to the mall. And it kind of crosses that line where like your personal horniness kind of crosses over into creepiness. So
that happens to me like every day.
I'm gonna say there's a line.
I mean, and every guy experiences this, but it's like, you know, you can go, like, you get to a certain age, you can go to the mall and just, you can get totally satisfied by just watching a chick try on shoes. You know, that kind of thing.
They call that a foot fetish.
Put it on. Put it on. Put it on a little slower. There you go. And there you got it. Thank you. Thank you very much. And you just walk on to the next store. But no, just, I don't know where I was going with that.
But, well, it's funny. Yeah, what
type it's one of those things. No, it really doesn't skew your perspective, because as a photographer, you know, I see beauty in a lot of different things. And it's just one of those things. You know, I'll never cross that line professionally, because one of my things is that I want the women that work with me to really trust me. And on top of it, you know, I do have a 14-year-old daughter, and I need to set an example there as well. I can't be running around and doing crazy things. But and it's really cliche, and there's 1,000 photographers that sleep with their models, and I just don't want to be one of them.
Yeah, no, and that's not where we were going necessarily. Just more about skewing your perception of what a normal or even above average attractive woman looks like when you spend all your day, you know, buried in a screen editing out pixels and blemishes and freckles off of what is probably, on a scale of 1 to 10, a woman who's like an 11.5, you know, and then you actually, you know, go and talk to real women in the real world.
Internet cliche point. You know,
it really doesn't mess it up that bad. You'd be surprised. You know, when you're working and you view it as your profession, you know, there's times that you look through the lens and you kind of go, wow, holy crap. But most of the time you shake that within seconds, because there's a job you have to do.
Well, you're looking for the right...
You're more worried about getting the shot right and getting the angles right and making sure that the client's happy than sitting there ogling through your lens. But there are a lot of photographers who do it.
Yeah, I worked with some in newspapers. I used to, like, creep out at the, you know, local parks and whatnot, so.
Well, you know, I used to work for Knight Ritter, and I will have to say, some of our staff photographers at the state newspaper in Columbia, South Carolina, they were some, yeah, I think when they went to events, an Amber Alert was issued before they arrived. They were some interesting individuals.
So are we going to get to see you in person this fall?
Yeah, you know, I am going to be at the Wisconsin-Iowa game. I will be on the field shooting. Ironically, with as much as I love Iowa, this is the first time I've ever been shooting in Kinnick Stadium. So I'm really stoked about that. And, you know, if anyone wants to come up and say hi, you know, I'll probably be wearing a black Iowa sweatshirt. And usually I wear my yellow baseball cap.
I think they put everybody in a green vest, like a fluorescent green vest.
Oh, yeah, they do that now, don't they?
I saw my daughter, when we took her, she was like, what's with all the guys in the green vest? And then they started whipping out these massive telephoto lenses.
Just write Hawk and SEC on duct tape and put it across the back.
You know, I should do something like that, or, you know, put like some type of cape or banner on me. You know, I don't have to do that when I go to the Orange Bowl to shoot UM games. They throw you your sideline pass and that's it.
You know, here's a question that is totally off the subject, but I always wondered, why don't they get any fans down there, especially when they're pretty good? I mean, it seems like they really struggle to fill that place.
You know, it's that old thing. I bitch about it all the time, and I get on my friends who are big UM fans. It's like, you know, you got this great weather, you got this team that's doing well. It was the same way with basketball last year. Their arena only holds 8,000 people. It's really small. But they didn't sell out until after they beat North Carolina for the first time. And that's a team that ran to the Sweet 16. And, I mean, they were, you know, I don't know how good they're going to be this year. But Miami fans are, you know, we complain on the Hawkeye boards about people being fair-weathered and very critical. But, I mean, look at the Dolphins. The Dolphins don't sell out. The Heat they really don't sell out too many games unless somebody big is in town or it's the playoffs. It's just... it's that typical huge metropolitan area, tons of things to do. You got the beach, you got clubs, you got, you know, all these different things to do. And college football, you know, when the Canes are on top, that place will be full. But until then, it'll always be about half full.
So in Miami, they're literally fair weather fans, though.
Oh, it's
too fair.
It's horrible here. I think their spring game, I think, got less than 300 people to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe just a function of the boredom here in Iowa that we just pack, especially in basketball.
Right.
Now that they're
what else are you going to do all winter?
Exactly. All right, so we're going to put you on the spot now, Anthony.
Okay.
So you're
okay,
coming for Wisconsin, but this week is an away game against, you know, the Gophers.
The Gophers. Right.
Some bacon's on the line.
Oh, we got to bring the pig back home with us. That's all there is.
And
to
Minnesota's undefeated. And, you know, they've done this undefeated before and never won again, but
you know, there's one thing in watching Iowa football for almost 40 years, one thing you can almost count on. Michigan State and Minnesota come flying out of the gate. And then they hit Big Ten play and they crumple.
Yep, yep.
It's, you know, I'm not going to say that we're going to beat Michigan State, but I'm pretty sure we're going to beat Minnesota. I've watched their games, you know, flipping it back and forth between, like, commercial breaks and stuff, and I've even taped a couple of the games just to see what they were made of this year. And they never have felt like a team, even when they were playing the lesser thans, they've never felt like a team to me that's been in, like, total control of the game. They're always, like, on this verge of, like, you know, this could turn around any second and these guys could come back on us. And one thing I've noticed about Iowa, you know, even though one thing that I will say is I'm really happy with Jake at quarterback, and now we got to see – Beathard last week, or how do you say his last name?
Is it Beathard? Beathard.
Yeah, I think Beathard.
Okay. You got to see CJ last week, and he looked really good. So if Jake goes down, I think we're in great hands. But, you know, it's just – I think we're going to go up there. I think we're going to kick ass and take some names. I think this team is focused. And, you know, right now, really all Minnesota has is a running game. They really don't have much of a passing game at all.
Or much of a defense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they don't look much better to me than they did last year, and Iowa handled them with that was one of their easier games last
year. They're kind of one-dimensional.
It seems to be everything by committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your score prediction, Anthony?
My score prediction for the Minnesota game, you know, it is up there. We haven't been able to claim that as Cold Kinnick North yet, but
you almost want the dome back.
we're always great in the dome.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 27-10, Iowa.
Sounds reasonable.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah.
We seem to be hitting that 26-27 barrier with score, except for last week. Pretty solid.
Yeah, last week was...
Well, two pick sixes and two punt returns for a touchdown. We're jokingly calling my son Twofer now because he was at the UNI game where they blocked two field goals. So
yeah, that's so just hilarious. Anything weird that can possibly happen in a football game,
if we
bring Tori's son, it'll happen twice.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you guys are going to have to let me know where you're tailgating when I come up, because I'll definitely come out and hang out with you guys. And, you know, if anyone wants to show up and, you know, introduce me to their fists or anything like that, they can feel free. You know, say hi.
That sounds like
awesome.
A good plan.
All right, well, we're looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks. And, you know, it'll be good to see you down on the field. I mean, we sit, our seats are so bad, we're like right on top of the field, so we could probably,
we'll be able to yell at you.
A beer or heckle you or whatever. Can you heckle photographers? We'll find a way to heckle a photographer.
Oh, you know, just don't chuck a battery at me. That's
right. Awesome. Hey, come on, this isn't Philadelphia.
But hey, I just, you know, also wanted to let you guys know that, you know, my daughter is now a freshman in high school, and she's all in honors classes. So the 36 flat screen has been upgraded to a 60-inch flat screen.
Did you pop her the
surround
3D?
Sound? She's got Blu-ray. She's got everything. I think that'll probably do her to college if she makes Dean's List.
I'm thinking home theater.
You may have to go with the home entertainment system for the dorm room. I don't know.
Yeah, so at least. I mean, you're going to have to pop for the ultra, the UHD with the 3D.
Oh, that works. Yeah, I get it first, though. Then she gets it.
Expert in photography and parenting, Anthony, Pocket SEC. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Hey, I'll see you guys in a few weeks.
All right, take care.
I do. Cheers.
Thanks. I always like talking to Anthony.
Yes.
He's always got some stories.
He's got stories.
It's actually when we're not recording and we're drinking a little bit more, like when he used to come up in the summertime. Those are some really good stories.
Absolutely.
So, how'd you feel about his prediction?
You know, I'm thinking kind of similar along the same lines. I guess it's my turn to pick first since I made you pick first. Let's go back last week. I think both of us saw a comfortable margin. No one saw 59 points, though, right?
No, I saw one score, but I thought Western Michigan was going to be in the 20s. Didn't I call it?
Like, oh. Yeah, I think I had them. I think I had it like 35-10.
Yeah.
You were like 35-17.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, we should probably listen to our own podcast.
We should probably, before we start talking bullshit, we should probably go back and look at what we said.
Isn't that's part of the charm.
But either way, neither of us saw that coming.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not a blowout.
No. And 3 points, you know. Yeah. No. I think we didn't see the... I mean, I'm actually surprised even after we put in the second string, they couldn't score on us.
No. Well, and, I mean, and how awesome is it to have a backup quarterback that you, like, kind of wouldn't mind seeing come into a game once in a while? I mean, that you know, I like that kid.
Yeah, he was impressive, especially with that long pass to...
I like the running.
The running is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we've broken down Western Michigan. We've broken down Minnesota. It's time to put your money on. No, we don't have any money to bet. We don't. We don't have any reputations at stake.
No.
we don't have any credibility.
You know what
at
we
risk.
Do have at stake, though, is that you and I are both perfect 4-0 in our predictions so far this year.
That's right.
Right.
And we have not diverged.
No. But so and. Iowa is on a 3-game winning streak since I dug out my old, like, 2001 black lucky t-shirt, I'll have you know.
Is that what I smelled?
Yeah, that's what you smell. I mean, maybe I shouldn't wash it since the Iowa State game. I don't know. Although I did kind of pit sweat out a little bit there towards the end of the fourth quarter. So probably a good day I washed it. You know, I like this team and I've watched Minnesota. I'm not impressed. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid or this fine Omegang beer that James nicely brought over. It's a Abbey Ale.
That's pretty good. It's a Belgian. Belgian there. It's pretty good.
I'm going to go, I think Iowa is going to win 28-14. Old-fashioned football, 4 touchdowns. Our run defense, you know, stymies them for the most part. I think it's going to be like 28-7, and then Minnesota gets a late score in the third quarter. Kind of Iowa does their usual stall out, which they seem to like to do in the third quarter of most games. And maybe makes it a little nervousy there towards the end. And we recover an onside kick and salt it up.
Oh, we cover it. I love that. That's sweet justice.
Sweet, sweet justice.
So I'm going to go a little crazy. I mean, I lectured you on your optimism. But here's where I'm going with this. I'm going to pick Iowa. I'm going to pick 37-17.
Wow.
And here's where I'm going with this. And the only bit I've seen of Minnesota is I watched probably 3/4 of that game they had with Western Illinois. And here's my justification for that. I think both teams start to run the ball against each other, and both teams are fairly good at bottling up each other's running game. But then two things happen. Iowa starts to mix it up a little bit with play action and some passing game, and as we've seen, has some modest, not flashy, not crazy, but just some modest success. And Minnesota doesn't.
Right.
And they start flinging the ball around, and we start seeing Tanner Miller and Lowry and, you know, King start to actually, you know, make
some
good plays.
In the secondary
now. I'm starting to come around to the
secondary.
They're
like secondary. The Bears. They're just going to start picking shit off and returning touchdowns. And
I don't think it's necessarily that the secondary has improved that much, so much as that I don't
been
think...
Been lucky to play some bad quarterbacks.
I don't think Minnesota has a passing game to dip into when the running game is not working, whereas Iowa does.
Right.
And so I think that we're going to get and we're going to pressure their quarterback, maybe not sack him, maybe it'll be more like last week where you just hurry him up, he starts making some bad throws, some tips at the line, and the next thing you know, pick six, I don't know, but maybe some possession changes. So I'm thinking that it's what did I say, 37-17?
And, well, I for one hope that Jerry Kill does not have a seizure. Number one, because I worry about his health, and that concerns me. But B, they're 2-0 when he has seizures.
Here's
so I don't know if it's like a win one for the Gipper kind of situation or whatever. So two reasons. One, I think I want the guy to be healthy because I think he's a nice guy and a good coach. And second, you know, well, they don't need any motivation, extra motivation.
Here's where I'm going with this is that at a certain point, whether he's a good coach or not, you have to really look at his health. His seizures seem to be brought on by stress, and there's nothing more stressful than coaching a college
football. You know, though, I was thinking about that, Jim, and the way I look at it is, you know, as my 15-year-old daughter is always prone to say, YOLO, you know, and the guy loves football. He loves being a coach. You know, it's obviously, I don't think it's life-threatening.
Well, it happens regularly enough that, when it happened during a Western Michigan game, they had a procedure that they invoked. Mm-hmm. Whereas the different assistant coaches or assistant coordinators suddenly took different roles and everything. I'm like, look, if something happens so frequently that you actually have a procedure that you invoke when something goes wrong. I mean,
but what's he supposed to do? Just retire and sit at home for the next 40 years?
No, I'm saying that for Minnesota, you have to recognize that, look, you've got a nice guy and he's a good coach, but is he in the right role? I mean, what's their, situation with athletic director?
I'm sure their doctors would have told him if it was, a life-threatening situation and he was endangering his health.
I feel bad for him, and I don't want him to push himself, I guess. And coaching is stressful.
Well, he's so cute. He looks like a gopher.
He does look like a gopher, and they're never going to find another coach that looks more like a gopher.
No,
than Jerry Kill. All right, well, looks like we're both calling for a victory.
Yeah.
Including our special guest. Yeah. Anthony's calling for a victory. We're feeling good, and if we are right, boy, that bodes well going into, into Michigan State, and it's a good start to the conference play, but one game at a time.
Exactly. We don't have to go on.
We don't. And
we're going to beat Ohio State. That's what we're going to do. You're going to Columbus and just kick their ass.
Well, one game at a time. If we can notch up a victory while still showing the same kind of gradual linear improvement, I'll be ecstatic.
Absolutely.
Because it's something to hang your hat on that we haven't had since going back to 2009, I think. So with that, we'll say on Iowa.
Go Hawks!